This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I am coming into my major client tomorrow, but not to work, I don't think. And if I am going to work, it will be dressed up in costume. Because tomorrow is International Dog Day. We'll see how this goes. I think it's funny. I showed it to my wife. She thought it was funny. Got it all put together. We'll see. Sometimes you just don't know. But I think it's funny. I think we're all right. We'll be good. I'm sure. We'll be all right. I did do a little tweak today. I had a thought that, yeah, I probably should do that. Anyways, so all is well. It's been a good week. Got a lot of good things done. Moving forward. So everything's good at work. Just moving in and finishing up the International Dog Day stuff. It's been a little interesting because I have robbed time away from the writing to get this done because the schedule was so compressed, and then I had this idea that I really liked, but it was going to require more time. So it's been, I juggled all weekend with the time, and I was doing stuff like, okay, so I'm gonna work until, you know, X hour, and then I'm going to write some, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and, you know, I have been just juggling time. And then in addition to all that, a Windows update came through for my computer Tuesday night. And when I got down Wednesday morning, the computer was not on. And I thought, okay. I turned the computer on and it came all the way up to the sign-on screen, you know, the picture where you normally just hit a button and ta-da. And I'd hit the button and nothing would happen. So I have a wireless keyboard, so then I went and got a wired keyboard and hooked it up, and nothing happened. Mouse, no mouse pointer, either they really killed something in the update, or I just had a hardware failure at the same time, lost all my USB ports. Tried to do a recovery, but the recovery came up and did an automatic recovery, and then it said, oh, can't fix anything, so go ahead and proceed on to here. Well, you can't proceed on to there because you can't get any inputs into the computer. It's like, oh. So I was, you know, running down the possibilities, buying another desktop, reinstalling this, doing this, blah, 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 blah. And then I thought, you know, my laptop already has Creative Suite on it, so that's a big thing. It already has Word and all those things on it, so that's a big thing. I just don't have QuickBooks, and I don't have Quicken on it, and so I just downloaded those, got those on them last night, and then I just did my normal Wednesday night, you know, all the little stuff that I do as far as finances and recording receipts and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just went ahead and did that last night on my laptop, which means that I need to now continue to work on my laptop, but I was able to get done everything I needed to get done and, you know, assigned the stuff I needed to sign, and ta-da. So I think I'm just going to cut over to my laptop. And a buddy of mine at work told me about these little mini docks that you can get now. To where that, oh, you know what? I bet I'm supposed to call somebody. Just a second. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. Yeah, that was a service. I'd gotten a service call and he had left a message that he was coming out tomorrow. As it turns out, he's coming out a little sooner than I thought he was going to come out. So he's either going to come after I get changed out of International Dog Day, or he's just going to come and my wife will take care of it. Anyways, I do have a long schedule tomorrow for International Dog Day, because I'm going to be heading south, and it's turning into a thing, you know? Oh, man. You know, but Lance, there are worse ways to spend your day than having people smile at you. And hopefully people will smile, because I do think this is funny. Hopefully. We'll see. I think it's funny. I know funny. This is funny. I think. We'll see. I'm sure it'll be fine. Anyways, that's all fine. The writing was a bit delayed. It is a bit delayed. Because if I hadn't been doing International Dog Day, I probably would have the epilogue done already. But I'm close. I'm actually heading into the epilogue. I will probably get some of it done tonight. At least I'll get started on it. And then tomorrow, I've got a long day, but I should have a couple of hours tomorrow I can work on it. And then between Saturday and Sunday, I really should be able to get the epilogue done. I know what I need to accomplish in it. I know what the moments are that I need to hit. I think there may be more in there. So I think it's going to be fine, which means that by Sunday night, I should have this under control. And even then, it means I'm a week ahead of schedule for where I would normally be, which is good, because then I can start my read-through. It's not an extraordinarily long book, so, you know, it's coming in at 100, it'll come in somewhere around 162. The last book came in at like 100, I don't know, it was like 178 or something like that, 179. So it was almost 2 weeks over what it was supposed to be. And so then that was a real scramble. But this one, it'll be close to 160. And so the read through, I shouldn't have that much stuff that I'm having to cut out of it. So I think it'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be great. Anyway, so that's good. So the writing is good. The work is good. The family is good. All is good. I did my son-in-law was my son-in-law was supposed to go to breakfast with me tomorrow morning, and that was before I knew it was International Dog Day. So I had written him as soon as I figured out there would be an International Dog Day, and I said, "Look, buddy, this just dropped. I am doing this. You know, if you'd prefer not to, I understand, it's fine." He was like, no, I can do that. Well, earlier this week, he said he had written jokingly. He said it was joking, but all the text I got was, "I'm feeling a little nauseated about breakfast." And well, you know, I'm not going to push anybody into doing anything I want. So I said, "Hey, it's no problem, buddy. You know, so-and-so said they'd go to breakfast with me if you didn't want to, so I've already written him. I got it under control. It's great." And then he wrote back and he said, "Oh, I was just joking." Okay. So I called him and I said, "Listen, I can tell this. No, I wouldn't want to interrupt." So I think it's all working out better. Fine. Because it's pretty, this one is a little over the top. But I think it'll be fine. It'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. Anyways, all is well. Is that the other, we're good, having a breakfast, doing International Dog Day. I had mentioned last week that I had some notes, and I had mentioned, I think, that I always find it fascinating when people start to become aware that our existence has elements that are not easily explained using the standard dogma. The order, the beauty of the universe. Its unreasonable effectiveness to understand it through mathematics. There's all these things about it that if you think about it a little bit, they're potentially are conundrums that are hard to resolve, and then people start trying to resolve them, and they resolve them in ways that, frankly, are possibilities. They do make sense. And sometimes they don't always appreciate that in resolving them those ways, it's pretty close to what we've been saying in Christianity all along. Specifically, Paul, when he says of Jesus in Colossians 1, nothing that was made without him. By him all things are made. And by him all things consist. So this article isn't quite to that consisting point yet. But, you know, some interesting things. So the name of the article is Physical Law an Alien Intelligence? The subtitle is Alien Life Could Be So Advanced That It Becomes Indistinguishable from Physics. So he talks about Arthur C. Clarke pointing out that any sufficiently advanced technology is going to be indistinguishable from magic. So he said, you know, if you dropped in on a bunch of Paleolithic farmers with your iPhone and a pair of sneakers, you'd undoubtedly seem pretty magical. But the contrast is only middling. The farmers would recognize you as basically like them, and before long, they'd be taking selfies. But what if life has moved so far on that it doesn't just appear magical, but appears like physics? So that's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, they mention that at this point, futurists and believers are talking about reaching a singularity. And they predict that life and its technological baggage might end up being so far beyond our ken that we wouldn't even realize we were staring at it. He says that's quite a claim, yet it would neatly explain why we have yet to see an advanced intelligence in the cosmos around us, despite the sheer number of planets it could have arisen on, the so-called Fermi paradox. Because we see machines growing exponentially in speed and sophistication, and it's not hard to kind of map out and say, you know, wow, where could it go? Now, all of these ideas aren't really testable. They cannot be tested. So they're not really testable. But, you know, if we kind of just let our brains run a little bit, you know, there may be a few things that we can look at and say, well, isn't this interesting? And what might this mean? So, for instance, only about 5% of the mass energy of the universe contains ordinary matter, the protons, electrons, neutrons that we're composed on. A much larger 27% is thought to be unseen, still mysterious stuff, astronomical evidence. For this dark gravitating matter is convincing, albeit not without question. Vast halos of dark matter seem to lurk around the galaxies, providing mass that helps hold things together via gravity. On even larger scales, the web-like topology traced by luminous gas and stars hints at an unseen mass. So, some astronomers, noting subtle mismatches between observations and models, have suggested that dark matter has a rich inner life. At least some component may comprise particles that interact with each other via long-range forces. It may seem dark to us, but it may have its own version of light that our eyes cannot see. So he says, in that case, dark matter could contain real complexity, and perhaps it is where all the technologically advanced life ends up, or where most all life has been. What better way to escape the nasty vagaries of supernova and gamma ray bursts than to adopt a form that is immune to electromagnetic radiation? So the idea here is that if you're a civilization and you learn how to encode living systems in different substrates, all you need to do, quote unquote, all you need to do is build a normal matter to dark matter data transfer system, a dark matter 3D printer. Perhaps the mismatch of astronomical models and observations is evident not just of self-interacting dark matter, but of dark matter that is being artificially manipulated. Okay, so, or to take this one step further, perhaps the behavior of normal cosmic matter that we attribute to dark matter is brought on by something altogether. A living state that manipulates luminous matter for its own purposes. Consider that at present, we have neither identified the dark matter particles nor come up with a compelling alternative to our laws of physics that would account for the behavior of galaxies or and clusters of galaxies. Would an explanation in terms of life be any less plausible than a failure of established laws? And he says, you know, the universe does other funky and expected stuff. Notably, it began to expand at an accelerated rate 5 billion years ago. The acceleration is conventionally chalked up to dark energy, but cosmologists don't know why the cosmic acceleration began when it did. In fact, one explanation with a modicum of traction is that the timing has to do with life, the so-called anthropic argument. Dark energy didn't become significant until enough time had gone by for life to take hold on Earth. For many cosmologists, this means our universe must be part of a vast multiverse where the strength of the dark energy varies from place to place. We live in one of the places that just happens to be suitable for life. Therefore, it's nothing extraordinary. Nothing special here, nothing to see. We just happen to live in one of the universes that supports life. Elsewhere, where the dark energy is stronger and blows the universe apart too quickly for cosmic structures, for life to take root, yada, yada. But he says perhaps there's another reason for the timing coincidence, that dark energy is related to the activity of living things. After all, any very early life in the universe would have already experienced 8 billion years of evolutionary time by the time expansion began to accelerate. It's a stretch, but maybe there's something about life itself that affects the cosmos. Or maybe those well-evolved denizens decided to tinker with the expansion. There are even possible motivations for this action. Life absorbs low energy entropy, such as visible light from the sun, does useful work with that energy, and dumps higher entropy energy back into the universe's waste heat. But if the surrounding universe ever got too warm or too filled with thermal refuse, things would stagnate. Luckily, we live in an expanding and constantly cooling cosmos. What better long-term investment by some hypothetical 5 billion years ago than to get the universe to cool even faster? That's an interesting idea. To be sure, it may come as to rue its decisions hundreds of billions of years later. The acceleration expansion would dilute matter so quickly that civilizations would run out of fresh energy sources. Also, an accelerating universe does not cool forever, but eventually approaches a floor in temperature. So, one idea for the mechanism of accelerating cosmic expansion is called quintessence, a relative of the Higgs field that permeates the cosmos. Perhaps some clever life 5 billion years ago figured out how to activate that field. How? Beats me, but it's a thought-provoking idea. And it echoes some of the thinking of Freeman Dyson's famous paper, Time Without End, where he looked at life's ability in the far, far future to act on an astrosymmetry. Okay, so, you know, he talks about the fact that, I'm getting my mail, one moment. You know, he talks about the fact that maybe life is hedging its bets, maybe I got some more ants in here, so I'm going to have to do something about that. You know, maybe it's just decentralizing, it's finding ways to spread, yada, yada, yada. But what's interesting about this is that all of this stuff is coming about because there are discrepancies on what we can see and what we can determine in cosmology. And then he talks about Carl Sagan's 1985 science fiction novel, Contact. The protagonist follows the suggestion of an extraterrestrial to study transcendental numbers. After computing to 1,020 paces, she finds a clearly artificial message embedded in this fundamental number. In other words, part of the fabric of the universe is a product of intelligence and perhaps even life itself. It's a great mind-bending twist for a book. Let me just get in the garage here. It's a great mind-bending twist for a book. Perhaps hyper-events life isn't just external. Perhaps it's all around. It's embedded in what we perceive to be physics itself, from the root behavior of particles and fields to the phenomenon of complexity and emergency. In other words, life might not just be in the equation, it might be the equations. Nothing was made without him, that he made all things, and by all things, the universe coheres. By all things, we consist. You know, it's it's interesting, like, because I read that and I go, yeah, I think that's an interesting idea. And I think that's something very much recognizing that it's a possibility that an advanced life could create this universe, could manipulate the universe. As I'm fond of saying, could create a virtual environment within which we exist, but that virtual environment is made out of real stuff. Just like we can create computers that can create a virtual environment inside the computer, God certainly would be advanced enough to produce something or by his will create something that would for him be a virtual environment because he exists outside of it, but he could hold it together so that we could exist, we could experience time, we could experience this game that he has constructed for us. And as I've told a friend just this week again, this is not a game you can lose. You know Jesus, you love Jesus. It's not a game you can lose. He's got this. Just move with him. Move forward. Move forward with him. Listen every day. It's just very fascinating that those who project, those who think of these things, who would normally just be considered materialists, who don't believe in anything beyond ourselves, they are seeing and having enough questions that they are at least saying, you know, this is, might be, there could be, perhaps. That's all very interesting to me. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.